Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the program. The RTC Weekly Download is the name of the program, the name of the host, Jim Dolan, and that's me. And you, all of you, are the listeners. Now that we've got that all covered, we're going to move on to superheroes. Now, you know, superheroes are very popular in the movies today, and they were popular in the radio way back then, including the Green Hornet. This is an episode of the Green Hornet radio show from 1946. It's called The Letter.
The American Broadcasting Company presents The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reeve, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. The Green Hornet strikes again.
Flushed and waiting as the great newspaper presses rolled to a stop and the curious press room men gathered around to ask questions.
Just what's happened, Gunnigan?
Yeah, we just got the Bulldog Edition rolling.
Yeah, what are you stopping us for?
Hang down, all of you! We've got everything set for a quick change. It's a front page switch.
Well, give her the hot news, Gunnigan. What's up?
Yeah. Plenty. Mayor Rhinecliff's just been indicted for grabbing.
A short time later, Britt Reed, young playboy publisher of the Daily Sentinel, was in the city room discussing the news with Gunnigan and Mike Axford, one of the Sentinel reporters.
Frankly, I've been stunned by the news of Rhinecliff's indictment. He's a close personal friend of mine and has been proven to be the best mayor this city has had up to now.
Maybe so, Reed. Sure, it's easy to know how you feel about it when you know him so well, but that's the way it was.
So you still think he's guilty, eh?
What else can we think, Chief? According to the indictment, he's...
Gunnigan, don't forget he has only been indicted. That doesn't prove he's guilty by a long shot. And it's only fair to consider him innocent until he is proven guilty.
Well, I...
Especially since we're newspaper men. It's downright unethical to try the mayor's case in the papers, as the others have already doing. That's a function for the courts.
By golly, Reed, you're right. Guess I wasn't thinking.
Well, that might be the case, Chief, but remember, the guy who's accusing Rhinecliff is David Frankton. Big political boss of the state. Now, he ain't sticking his neck out like that for nothing.
Well, that remains to be seen. Axford, try to get an interview with both Rhinecliff and Frankton. Then let me know what you get from them.
See, that's a good idea, Chief. We'll run both interviews in the same edition. If Axford gets anything from him.
Oh, I'll come back with something all right. Don't worry about that. See you both later.
Okay, Axford. I'll be waiting to know what they say, so see me when you get back.
Okay, so long.
It was late the following afternoon when Mike Axford finally got in for the interview with Mayor Rhinecliff. The mayor, a genial-faced, stocky man, showed no trace of worry as he sat talking to Axford.
Of course, the accusation by Frankton and the indictment came as a complete surprise to me, Mr. Axford. But I'm sure the whole case will fall through.
But what about the fact that Frankton says he can prove what he claims, Mr. Mayor?
It's preposterous. I've never taken one penny of graft, and I never intended to do so. According to Frankton, I'm supposed to have taken a large sum of money from the Citywide Construction Company, in return for which, according to Frankton, I influenced the city housing director in picking their bid.
So that's the charge he brought, huh?
That's it. But I can prove I had nothing to do with the selection of that bid. And I can further prove I did not receive 1 cent from that construction company, or any other company for that matter.
Well, it's easy to see you're not the least bit worried about the whole thing, Mr. Mayor. But what gets me is why Franklin should bring a charge like that if it's not true.
Frankly, that puzzles me, too. I've always been on the best of terms with Franklin, or so I thought up to now. Well, I'm afraid I'll have to bring the interview to a close, Mr. Axford. There's nothing more I can say on the subject right now.
Okay, Mr. Mayor. But if you don't mind, there's just one thing I'd like to ask.
Very well.
Have you any idea what sort of proof it is that Franklin expects to bring out?
Well, for one thing, he claims he can produce a letter written by me to Mr. Purcell, the assistant housing director. Purcell handled the bids while the director was on extended leave. Franklin says that in the letter, I definitely directed Purcell to give the bid to Citywide, that I spoke of certain money which would be forthcoming to me. Whole thing is ridiculous. Purcell will be my main witness.
Yeah. Well, thanks for seeing me, Mr. Mayor.
Not at all. I'm always glad to talk to a reporter from the Daily Sentinel. Good day, Mr. Axford.
Goodbye, sir. And good luck to you in your case. I hope Purcell can throw the lie to Franklin.
Axford walked slowly down the steps of the city hall as he put his attention on the notes he had scribbled while interviewing the mayor. Then suddenly...
Suffering snakes! Somebody got shot down! Let me through!
Hey, get back, everybody! Stand back! Oh, hello, Axford.
Hey, Cassidy. What happened? Anyone hurt bad?
Sure. This man lying here was killed by bullets from that machine gun. You must have heard it.
I heard it all right, but it all happened so fast. Have you found out who he is or who did the shooting?
Well, the killers got away too fast to find out anything about them. But I know this guy all right. He must have just come out of City Hall.
Yeah? Who is he then?
He's an assistant in the housing director's office. A guy by the name of Purcell.
A short time later in the Daily Sentinel...
Cassie, he's right in his office.
Well, yes, he is, Axford.
Oh, Axford, I've been waiting for you to come in. But Gallagher told me you called in the story about Purcell's murder. He's been waiting for a follow-up and...
I stopped at the city room on my way here, Reed.
Oh, good.
I gave Gunnigan what details I could. Of course, the cops haven't any clue to the killers. But from something the mayor told me, well...
Well, what?
Reed... Mayor Rhinecliff told me just a while ago that Purcell, he's the assistant housing director for the city, you know. Well, Purcell was to be the main witness for Rhinecliff in the Graff case.
Really?
Well, it looks to me as though somebody didn't want Purcell to testify for Rhinecliff.
Yes. Yes, it does, Miss Case.
And I wouldn't trust Frankton any further than I could see him just among us.
Frankton? Huh. You don't think a big shot like him would pull a thing like that, do you?
Maybe I do, and maybe I don't, Axford.
Now, see here, Casey. It could have been the other way around.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, maybe Purcell was going to testify against the mayor, in spite of what he told me. So what's to prevent Rhinecliff from trying...
I know Rhinecliff wouldn't do such a thing.
Okay, but my way of thinking's just as good as Casey's.
Well, what any one of us thinks doesn't matter. The facts will have to be proved before either Franklin or Rhinecliff can be involved in Purcell's killing. Come into my office, Axford. Tell me everything Mayor Rhinecliff said to you in the interview.
Sure, Reed, sure. I took notes so I can tell you what he said, almost word for word.
Britt Reed listened closely as Axford told about his interview with Mayor Rhinecliff. A short time later, Britt sent Axford to police headquarters for further news. Then, leaving the Sentinel building, the young publisher went to his apartment, where Cato, his faithful Filipino valet, and the only person knowing his identity as the Green Hornet, was waiting. The two men discussed the case.
Cato? Axford told me he found out from the mayor that Franklin claims he can produce a letter signed by Rhinecliff, in which he directed Purcell to give a housing construction bid to the Citywide Construction Company.
Oh, that's not good.
Moreover,
Mayor Rhinecliff is said to have mentioned in the letter that he was to receive a sum of money if the bid went through.
Would see men in position of mayor not do anything so unwise as that, Mr. Britt?
Of course. Mayor Rhinecliff is a smart man. He certainly wouldn't put anything like that into a letter to a subordinate. Or to anybody else, for that matter.
Well, yet, person in position like Frankton not likely...
Frankton wouldn't make a statement he couldn't back up.
Well, then you think Frankton be able to produce such a letter, perhaps?
Yes. He must have a letter signed by the mayor that will prove damaging. Yet I have faith in Mayor Rhinecliff.
Well, you think there's some trick to make letter damaging, Mr. Britt?
It could be. I'd like to see that letter. Of course, if Rhinecliff has pulled something crooked, he'd have to take the consequences.
Well, Frankton not show letter to anyone, not even publisher of Sentinel. But perhaps there's some way Green Hornet...
Yes. Maybe the Green Hornet could get that letter, Cato. It's worth a try, anyhow.
Will Green Hornet try tonight, perhaps?
Why not? We'll leave right now. Come on. Right in back of the building where Frankton has his offices. His private office is on the first floor at the back.
Do you know which windows are in Frankton's office, Mr. Britt?
Yes. Those two there. Pull close to the building and stop. His office is just above us.
Will you think it difficult to get in?
No. We'll climb to the top of the car. From there I can reach up and manipulate the window catch. Come on.
It's dark here in back alley.
Yes. No one will notice the Black Beauty. Now we'll get to the car, Tom.
This brings us right up to window.
Yes. Here goes.
Using a thin steel instrument, Britt Reed worked for a few minutes in the window catch until finally it gave way.
Well, that did it. Follow me inside, kiddo. Don't make any noise. We don't want to have the building guard on our necks. Okay, come on.
I'm coming.
Flash your light around to get our bearings.
Yes, sir. Look, there, file cabinet.
Yes. You go look through the files under the R's. See if you find anything on Rhinecliff. I'll go through Frankton's desk.
All right. It'll only take a minute.
Now to search his desk.
Britt and Cato made an exhaustive search of Frankton's office, but without success. Then, noticing a small safe, the old-fashioned type, in the corner, Britt decided to force it open. Time moved swiftly as Britt, with experienced fingers, worked on the safe. With the aid of a small electrical device to amplify the sound of the tumblers, he twirled the knobs untiringly.
I'm familiar with this type of safe, but it's taking a long time to... There. I heard the tumblers fall, Cato.
Well, that's good. We here in office too long for comfort.
Yes. Now for a look inside.
Safe connected with burglar alarm.
Yes. I'll have to hurry. The guard will be here any minute. You go out the window now. Hurry.
I have Black Beauty ready for quick getaway.
An envelope. Mark. Evidence against Rhinecliff. I got it. Oh, the guards have to beat it.
Hey, look. Going through the window. It's the Green Hornet. Shoot again, Bill. Quick.
Attracted by the burglar alarm which had been connected to Frankton's safe, two guards rushed into Frankton's office as Britt Reed started through the window, and they shot at him. At the second shot, Britt groaned, and for a few seconds swayed as he straddled the window ledge.
He's shot! Let's close in on him!
You hit! Hurry, I held!
I'm all right. Graze my shoulder. Quick, help me.
Here, we must hurry. Here, jump to ground.
Get in quick. Hurry, Cato.
Hey, yes, sir.
Read all about it, Sentinel X-Tree. Pep, Pep!
A short time later, Britt Reed and Cato were back in their apartment discussing their narrow escape.
Would have me plenty scared, Mr. Britt, when I see you get hit.
Luckily, the bullet just grazed my shoulder. But for the moment, I was slightly stunned. Oh, it feels all right now, thanks to your doctoring, Cato.
Will you not look at letter yet?
We'll look it over now. Hand it to me, will you?
Yes.
Let's see now. Hexon City House.
What did it say, Mr. Britt?
It's a long letter, Cato. Taking up a whole sheet of paper and part of another. The incriminating part is the last paragraph on the first page and the ending.
Well, it not seem possible Mayo write such a letter.
Well, there it is. Of course, he'd have to have something on Purcell to dare to put on such a thing in writing.
Well, then you think Rhinecliff really signed letter?
Oh, he signed it all right. I've seen his signature often enough. But I...
Well, you have other thought?
Yes, I have, Cato.
What are you thinking of, Mr. Britt?
I'm thinking of a plan to find out the truth. I'll tell you what my plan is, and then in the morning I'll put it into effect. And I have reason to believe we'll get results.
It was late the following afternoon when Mr. Frankton, big political boss, looked up from his desk as one of his assistants entered the office.
Well, what is it?
Mr. Frankton, this special delivery letter just arrived for you.
All right, let me have it.
Here it is.
From the Daily Sentinel, huh?
Yeah.
Dear Mr. Frankton, the rumor has reached us that in view of a turn of events, you intend to resign your office. We shall appreciate it if you will send us a signed statement verifying or denying this rumor, as the case may be.
But, Mr. Frankton...
Now, wait a minute. We shall withhold any mention of the matter until we have definite written word from you. Well, of all the... How did such a rumor get started?
I wouldn't know.
Well, you go get a denial typed up right away and bring it in for me to sign. I'll stop that rumor here and now.
Okay, right away. Yes?
You wanted me, Mr. Nixon? I was out of the office.
Miss Hood, I have a letter here from the Daily Sentinel. Special delivery that just arrived.
Yes, sir?
There's a rumor going around that I'm going to resign as city housing director. I want you to write out a denial of that rumor and bring to me for my signature as soon as possible.
Yes, Mr. Nixon. I'll type it right now.
That same afternoon in the mayor's office...
We shall withhold any mention of the matter until we have definite written word from you. I'll have to get out a denial of that rumor right away.
The following night, Britt Reed arrived at his apartment.
Will you get replies to letters, Mr. Britt?
Yes, Cato. Needless to say, all three deny the rumor. Here are the replies. Come over to the desk. I want to get the letter we took from Frankton's office the other night.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out that you're on the right track.
Yes. Well, let's see. Yes, here it is. Now, we'll study these carefully. Now, look here. On the second page of the letter, offers as evidence, there's only two small A's used. In the words anxious and are. But they're perfectly formed. On page one of the same letter, the small letter A is broken. A nick in the type.
That right.
Otherwise, the type is well matched. In both pages, it's clear and dark.
Oh, in Mayor's denial note, the A matched that on second page.
Yes. That proves somebody retyped the first page, making it tie in with what was written on page two, which contains the signature of Rhinecliff.
Well, perhaps one of the other two denials show that... Oh, look, Mr. Britt.
Well, that's it, Cato. There's the slight neck.
Then that the one who...
I feel sure it is. If so, he was responsible for Purcell's death, too. I'm going to make a phone call. Then we'll act. I hope he's still at his office. It'll make things easier for us. Hello? This is Britt Reed of the Daily Sentinel calling. Oh, is it? Good. I was afraid you might have left. I called to say we received your denial, and we'll spike the rumor. Yes. And, by the way, it might interest you to know the authorities have a line on Purcell's killers. Yes. They expect to close in on their hideout later tonight. Oh, yes, of course. Good night. All right, Cato. Now we'll go take out the Black Beauty. The Green Hornet has a job to do.
Maybe he not drive to hideout, but use phone instead, Mr. Britt.
I don't think he'll phone. He'll want to make sure those killers leave town without putting the finger on it.
It's not good we wait too long inside alley. If someone comes...
Quiet, kiddo. There's someone coming out over there now.
Oh, you think it him?
Wait till he passes under the streetlight. And be ready to leave us. That's our man, kiddo.
He's getting into car at curb.
There he goes. Get after him and hurry.
There, car of men we follow.
Yes. And there's a light in the front room of that old house. Come on.
We must be careful. They killers.
We'll be ready for them. Anyway, we'll be taking them by surprise. Easy now.
They in there?
Yes. I'll sling the door open suddenly. You come in when I need you.
Yes, sir.
Here goes. Don't move, any of you. Well, Nixon, here I am, according to your plan.
Plan? What are you talking about?
Oh, don't worry about those two mugs, Nixon. I promised I'd get rid of them for you.
Hey, what's that you say? Don't pay any attention to them boys. He's
Look, Nixon, I don't fool around when I have a job to do. You want them out of the way because they might involve you in the murder of your assistant, don't you?
Sure. Nixon told him about us knocking off Purcell.
Yeah, that dirty skunk. He's the one who paid us to do it, too.
Shut up, you two.
It's a double cross. He's hired the Hornet to rub us out, Joe.
This is all a trick. But you won't get away with that, Hornet.
Oh, you won't.
That was lucky. But this time I'll show you.
You talk too much, Nixon.
Joe, we better do something.
I'll do something right now.
Joe, use your rod. Get the Hornet.
Watch it, Joe.
Joe, not help you from this.
Oh, hey, listen, Hornet. Let me alone. I'll tell you anything you want to know. Honest, I will.
Listen to me, killer. If you know what's good for you, you'll tell the cops everything you know about Purcell.
Yeah.
Turn state's witness. And then maybe you won't hang with those two.
Yeah, yeah, I'll tell everything.
See that you do. Now take this. Now you can phone the police, Cato. I'll leave a little note telling that these are Purcell's killers. Joe's talking will do the rest.
Later that night, in the city room of the Daily Sentinel...
Man alive, Axford, we sure got a story this time.
Yeah, that we have. I phoned Reed and he said he'd come down. Wants to write an editorial as a follow-up.
Yeah, I suppose it... Oh, here he comes now.
Well, it seems as though you have big news tonight, Gunnigan.
We sure have, Chief.
Imagine, Reed. The city housing director Nixon was behind the whole thing.
He was?
Yeah. The cops got a confession from one of the killers that he'd hired to get rid of Purcell.
But I don't get it.
Let me tell you, Reed. Nixon had it in for Mayor Rhinecliff. Because the mayor was suspicious of him and warned him if he didn't watch out, Purcell would get his job.
That's right, Chief.
Then, when the big housing project came up, the mayor purposely sent Nixon out of town so as Purcell could handle the bids.
But what about the evidence Frankton had against the mayor?
Oh, that. Well, Nixon took that to Frankton, so Frankton thought it was on the level. But it wasn't.
No?
You see, the mayor wrote to Purcell telling him how important it was to deal honest with them bids, saying it meant a lot to the city. He said any partiality would bring disgrace to the department, and to him, the mayor, that is, and would result in Purcell's dismissal.
Well?
Nixon took that letter, 2 pages it was, and retyped the first page so it fitted into the second page, making it seem like mayor was taking a bribe. Nixon had Purcell get the mayor's copy of the first letter. Then Purcell got suspicious and guessed the truth.
Sure. So Nixon had him killed before he could show him up. But it was the Hornet who tipped off the cops where to find Nixon with the killers, though.
The Green Hornet?
That it was. That's right. He was in with them. But he and Nixon had a falling out, so he messed him up and pawned the cops.
Well, I'm glad to hear Frankton and the mayor are both in the clear.
Sure. Franklin already sent an apology to Rhinecliffe.
Well, Franklin was only doing his duty as he saw it.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure. And the Hornet did his duty as he saw it, too. Only all he was thinking about was himself. I know that spot feeling like a book, that I do.
Well, remember, you can't judge a book by its cover, expert. Good night.
Now, what the devil did he mean by that, I'd like to know.
And that was the Green Hornets. Well, we're moving off to comedy right now with a comedian called Judy Canova, very popular in the late 40s. Here she is with guest Eddie Cantor. This is from 1948.
From Hollywood, the Judy Canova Show. Brought to you each week by the Colgate Palmolive Teeth Company, makers of Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair. And the new 1948 Super Suds with extra suds for extra whiteness. Judy Canova Show with Mel Blanc, Ruby Dandridge, Joe Kearns, Ruth Perrott, our guest star, Eddie Cantor, Charles Danton, his orchestra, and starring Judy Canova. Well, Eddie Cantor is going to run for president, and Judy Canova has made a deal with him to get votes. Eddie has promised Judy a screen career if she will get him the votes of all her friends in Cactus Junction. At the moment, Judy is discussing the situation with Aunt Aggie and Geranium.
Judy, do you mean to tell me Eddie Cantor is actually running for president?
Yeah, Miss Judy.
A radio comedian for president?
That's right. Well, Judy, I think Mr. Cantor would make a nice-looking president. But you know, I've always wondered what makes his eyes pop out like that.
Well, if you woke up some morning and found out you were the father of five girls, your eyes would pop out, too. Mine are starting to bug out just thinking about it.
You don't, Geranium?
No, ma'am. If you ask me, that man wears his girdle too tight.
Geranium. Huh? Geranium, Mr. Cantor doesn't wear a girdle.
Oh, you can't tell about these men, Miss Judy. Rochester told me that Mr. Bennett wears a toupee.
Yeah, well, I know, but a toupee is different. A toupee covers what you haven't got, and a girdle hides what you wish you didn't have.
Judy.
I know.
Judy, if you get the Cactus Junction vote for Eddie Cantor, did he promise anything besides a screen career?
He sure did. He said when he's president, he'll pave the streets in Cactus Junction with gold from Fort Knox.
But Judy, won't the government need the gold to back up the dollar?
Back up the dollar? Just if it backs up any further, it'll look like a postage stamp.
Judy, this might be your turn to put you a break, give you a break in pictures.
Oh, yes, Judy. Didn't one of the directors tell you had legs like Grable? No, Aunt Aggie. He said I had legs like Gable. The duck hunter, you know.
Sorry, Eddie Cantor has a lot of influence at the studio.
Yeah, I hope I can get him a lot of votes.
Miss Judy, I can get my boyfriend Pomeroy's vote. Yeah, when I make love to that man, he's putty in my hand.
You really win him over, huh, Geranium?
Yeah, honey. Last night I puckered up and called him my luscious little bunch of sugar beet.
Yeah, well, what did he say to that, huh?
He said, come close to my little pressure cooker and let me hear you sizzle.
Doesn't he, Geranium?
Miss Judy, when that man just holds my hand, I get the feeling I'm walking on Pussy Willows wearing peach balls for business.
bedroom slipper. I hope your screen tests are successful.
Gee, I hope so, too. But that director made me awful nervous. Every time I tried to read my lines, he waved his finger under my nose and hollered,
"Pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita."
Oh, Pedro. Sally, what's wrong? You look mad today.
I am, Senorita. I just flew off the handle.
How come?
I was cranking the car.
Crank.
The little Austin. Senorita, it makes me mad every time I try to crank that Austin.
Why?
The crank stands still and the car spins around. Senorita, has that car got a fluid drive?
What makes you think it has fluid drive?
When I was driving down the street and I heard somebody say, "Look at that drip behind the wheel."
I want to see how my screen test came out. I got to talk to Eddie Cantor.
Oh, Senorita, once at a movie studio, me and my cousin Gonzalez got a job playing horse.
A horse, Pedro?
Si. They asked Gonzalez to be the head and shoulders.
Where did you fit in?
Senorita, I quit before they could tell me.
Studios. We don't want to be late. Mr. Cantor's a very important man.
All right, quiet on the set, everybody. Quiet. Mr. Cantor is ready to record. Okay, roll him.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Think the traffic will allow. Nowhere do you get that happy feeling like when you're stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they've hung a star. Let's go on with the show. Yes, there is no business like show business. It owes me nothing. I owe it a lot. Show business introduced me to the great Ziegfeld and Will Rogers and Fanny Bryce and W.C. Fields and Bert Williams and Marilyn Miller. And what a joy it was to play in those shows for Mr. Ziegfeld. He wanted to walk out on the stage and sing those great songs that everybody loves, songs like these.
My cares and woes, here I go, singing low. Bye bye, Blackbird. Where somebody waits for me, sugar is sweet and so is she. Bye bye, Blackbird. No one here can love and understand me. And oh, what hard luck stories they all hand me. So make my bed, light the light. I'll be home late tonight, Blackbird. Bye bye. Ain't she sweet? See you coming down the street. And I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet? Ain't she nice? Look her over once or twice. And I ask you very confidentially, ain't she nice? Just cast an eye in her direction. Oh me, oh my. Ain't that perfection? Some confection, I repeat. Don't you think she's kind of neat? And ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet? How are you going to keep them down on the farm after they see Harry? How are you going to keep them away from Broadway, jazzing around, painting the town? How are you going to keep them away from harm? That's a mystery. Imagine Reuben when he meets his pa. He'll kiss his cheek and holler, ooh, la, la. How are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Harry?
Thank you.
was wonderful, Mr. Cantor. You'll be able to hear the rushes in about an hour. Oh, by the way, there's someone here to see you.
You know, didn't I tell you that when I'm recording, I don't want to see a human being?
But this is Judy Canova.
Oh, send her in, that's right.
Howdy, Eddie.
Hello, Judy. I'm sorry I kept you waiting.
Oh, shucks, that's all right. Gee, I was listening to that wonderful medley you were singing about show business. Golly, those must have been exciting days.
Yes, and the nights weren't so bad either.
Judy, every time I can be had. Look, Judy, every time I sing those old songs, it takes me back to my early days. I'll never forget the first time I worked for Flo Ziegfeld. You should have seen the review I got after opening night. It said, "Last night, Flo Ziegfeld presented his new show starring Eddie Cantor. It was one of Ziegfeld's biggest follies." Ah, and those Ziegfeld girls, oh, Judy, I fell in love with every one of them. Big, gorgeous showgirls, 6 feet tall. Every one of them.
Yeah, but, Eddie, you're not that tall yourself. How could you kiss them?
When Jolson got down on his knee, I got up on his back. Get up, Al.
Yeah. Well, Eddie, this is all very interesting, but I came over here to talk to you about my movie career. Now, remember our deal. If you don't get me in pictures, I won't get the folks back in Cactus Junction to vote for you for president.
Judy, you've got nothing to worry about. Here, I'll prove it to you. Hey, Joe!
Oh, yes, Mr. Cantor?
Has Mr. Thornton looked at Miss Canova's screen test?
Yes, and he asked me to return these still pictures to her. Here they are, Miss Canova.
Oh, thank you. Now, ain't this nice? Listen to what he wrote on the back of my picture. This girl has feet as dainty as fairy boots.
Mr. Cantor, she read that wrong. It says this girl has feet as dainty as fairy boats.
Yeah, here's something else he wrote. Got me kind of puzzled, though. It says, this girl hasn't got six apples.
Now, let me see that. Six apples. It says this girl hasn't got sex appeal. Why, Joe, that is utterly ridiculous. How could anybody say a thing like that about Judy?
But, Mr. Cantor, look for yourself. Miss Canova's just like all the other girls. Her complexion comes out of a box, her red lips come out of a tube, and her eyebrows are painted on.
Well, don't let it fool you, mister. The rest is all me.
Judy, Joe, I'm disappointed in you. Don't you agree this girl? Don't you agree this girl is cut out to be in pictures?
Absolutely. We'll cut her out of this one. Goodbye.
Judy, I'm terribly sorry, but there goes your movie career.
Yeah, Eddie, and there go your votes from Cactus Justin.
Judy, don't say that. After all, what is a movie career? You work hard, you become famous, and then the public forgets you. Years later, you make a comeback. You've got a home with a swimming pool in Beverly Hills, $8 million in the bank. They make a movie of your life.
Yeah, and then what?
You wind up looking like Al Jolson. What a terrible thing. I wouldn't even wish that on Georgie Jessel. Look, I'll tell you what we do, Judy. I got a much better idea. You get me the votes from Cactus Junction, and when I'm president, I'll make you Secretary of Agriculture.
Oh, me? Secretary of Agriculture?
Why not? Everybody likes you. You're a farm girl. You've got the human touch.
Yeah, Eddie, I guess you're right. That's what's missing on the farm.
What do you mean, Judy?
Well, they ought to get rid of them milking machines and bring back the human touch. Yeah, it sure make them cows happier, I know that.
Judy, what have you got against those milking machines?
Oh, Eddie, they get out of order now and then. Once our milking machine went into reverse and we couldn't shut it off.
Gosh, what happened to the cow?
They found her 6 days later over the Kansas City airport looking for a place to land. Listen, tell me, are you sure you want me to be Secretary of Agriculture?
Yes. Judy, if I'm elected president, I want to have a good, strong farm block. And I want you at the head of it.
Eddie, you've convinced me.
You mean you'll be the head of my farm block?
Yep. You couldn't find a better blockhead than Judy Canova.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. Remember, even finest soaps and soap shampoos hide the natural luster of your hair with dulling soap film. But Halo contains no soap, therefore cannot leave dulling soap film. The first time you use Halo, your hair glistens in all its natural brilliance. The natural color and luster shine through like sunshine through a clean window pane. And remember, even in hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff and grease, needs no lemon or vinegar rinse, because Halo leaves no dulling soap film. Nothing to hide your hair's natural beauty. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Use Halo on your children's hair, too. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter. Remember, Halo glorifies your hair.
So Halo, everybody, Halo. Halo shampoo, Halo.
Well, as everybody knows, Eddie Cantor is running for president. And in order to get the Cactus Junction vote, he has promised if he's elected, he'll make Judy Secretary of Agriculture.
Oh, yes. Just think of it, Judy. We'll make a great team. I'd be president and you'd be secretary. I'm a man and you're a woman.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that we both started as babies. Eddie, tell me something. How come you ever got mixed up in politics?
Oh, simple. I just made a bunch of campaign promises and threw my hat in the ring.
You threw your hat in the ring?
Yeah, like they do in Spain.
Yeah, but this is politics. In Spain, it's the bull ring.
Same thing here, baby. Thank you, Democrat. Judy. Judy, since I entered politics, life has been perfectly wonderful.
How do you mean, Eddie?
Well, this morning when I got up, the maid said to me, "Good morning, Mr. President." I came downstairs, the gardener said, "Good morning, Mr. President." The cook said, "Good morning, Mr. President." The night I came in, asked for some money, back to schmo again.
Understand. How do you find out what the people want?
Why, you just talk to the man in the street. Come on out. Here, I'll show you. Come on out the street. Look, Judy, here comes an average citizen now. Hey, mister.
Yeah? What can I do for you?
Can you tell me what the man in the street wants?
Yeah, he wants to move out of the street and into a house.
You see, Judy, if you're going to be a politician, you've got to get close to the people.
Yeah, Eddie. I think that fella would have voted for you, but I bet he don't even know what ticket you're running on.
Judy, I'm organizing my own political party. If Henry can do it, so can I. What's the difference?
But you mean you're going to leave your regular party?
Why not? A man can bolt his party if he wants to. History proves that every year there are plenty of bolts in Washington.
Yeah, and plenty of nuts go with them. Eddie, you might have some tough competition. Governor Dewey, for instance.
Are you kidding? What has Dewey got that I haven't got?
Two sons.
Since when does two of a kind beat a full house?
But Eddie, Governor Dewey's very popular in the farm district. I saw a campaign picture of him milking a cow.
Milking a cow? Why, that's dirty politics.
What do you mean?
A guy that would do that would pull anything.
If you're elected, what's your platform going
to
be?
The first thing I'm going to do is to give the country back to the people.
Golly, don't the people have enough trouble? What else are you going
to
do?
I even have a plan for world peace. Listen to this. I plan to move all the Russian people to France, all the French people to Poland, all the Polish people to Italy, and all the Italian people to Turkey.
Yeah, but how will that bring about world peace?
Everybody be so busy learning a new language, they won't have time to fight.
Congress to back you up. You might run into one of them filibusters.
I'm not what? Filibuster?
Yeah, that's when somebody gets up in the House and talks for days and days and never stops.
Oh, Ida. Oh, yeah. Imagine Ida, the first lady of the land, and you, Judy Canova, Secretary of Agriculture.
You know, Eddie, I think I'll take the job. Gee, I could do a lot of things for the folks back home in Cactus Junction. So I could send them pamphlets, seeds, maybe even medicine.
Medicine?
Yep. I'll send each family a gallon of Dr. Kern's Wonder Tonic. It's good for men and women and little girls. It's even good for growing boys.
Judy, would you mind repeating that?
I said...
Wait a minute. Let me get something, will you? No prompting. Go ahead, Judy.
Eddie, yeah. I said it's even good for growing boys.
At last I know what to get Ida for her birthday.
Junction makes me realize that if I go to Washington, I might get awful lonesome for my folks.
Do you think you could find a place in your cabinet for them?
Yeah, but I don't know anything about your folks, Judy. Are they true sons and daughters of the soil?
They sure are. Pa worked in the good earth, and after working for 30 years in the good earth, they had only one thing to say.
What was that?
Gosh, I sure need a bath. But you know, my family could do you a lot of good in Washington, Eddie. They're real live, up-and-at-em people, always on the toes. Well, I remember one day back home in Texas Junction, Ma was talking to Pa. She walked over to him and said, "Wake up, Pa. Come on, get up, you lazy critter."
Oh, gosh, Ma.
What makes you so tired?
I'm all pooped out. I walked clear from the barn yesterday.
That hadn't ought to tire you out. It's only a few feet.
I know, Ma, but the wind was against me. Ma, I didn't sleep good last night. I was cold.
Well, I was cold in bed, too, Pa.
Well, I gave you that hot water bottle last night. Didn't that warm you up?
Nope, and I drunk the whole thing.
I got a cold in the head. How can I stop it from going down into my chest?
That's easy, Pa. Just tie a knot in your neck. Pa, breakfast is ready. Start with your coffee.
Oh, Ma. There's a grasshopper in this coffee.
Summer is over, Pa. That ain't no grasshopper.
Are you sure?
Yes, Pa. You know I never serve nothing out of season.
Ma, this is too a grasshopper.
Well, stop a blowing on your coffee. You making seasick. Look, Pa, here comes Judy's dumb boyfriend, Lucy. How do Luke?
He borrowed my shirt to go out on a date last night, and when he come back, it was all covered with lipstick.
Lukey, why should that make you mad?
Well, how'd you like to stay home while your shirt was out having a good time, huh?
Thing you're all head up about today.
Gosh, no. When I was coming up to walk, that old hound dog of yours bit me.
Now, Lucy, that old hound dog can't bite. He just barked.
Well, he just barked the seat out of my pants.
Lukey, you're just plain stupid. What's wrong with your brains lately?
Well, Ma's been washing my head with water softener.
Lukey, you'd be smarter if you hadn't have been so stubborn about going to school.
Yeah, Lukey, you're so pig-headed, you'll never amount to nothing.
Oh, shucks, I will, if the price of pork stays up. Excuse me, I'm going into the other room and call Judy. My ding dongies, I sure do love that girl.
Aw, remember when we was a courting, you said my mouth was like a rosebud.
Yeah, Ma. And the day we got married, it opened up and it's been open ever since. You was lucky to land me, Ma. There's few people left in the world like me.
I know, Pa. That DDT does a good job, doesn't it? Well, let's get the chores done. You slop the hogs, and I'll get the mixing bowl and give Willie a haircut. Seems like a body ain't got no time for nothing.
And, Eddie, that'll give you an idea what my family's like.
That's very interesting, Judy.
Well, don't you think you could put them in your cabinet?
That's a good idea, Judy.
You mean you'll do it?
Yes, I'll put them all in the cabinet, lock the door, and throw away the key.
Well, folks, have you heard the big news? Have you seen our amazing pictures of a huge 15-ton trailer truck overflowing with rich thick suds from the new 1948 Super Suds? Do you realize that every single lively, bustling bubble in that big truckload of suds came out of just one, yes, we said one, box of the new extra sudsy 1948 Super Suds? Seems hard to believe, but it's true. It's been proved. And what does that mean for you? It's the suds that do the work. Just because of those extra suds and the new 1948 Super Suds, no other soap in the whole wide world can wash white clothes whiter, wash clothes cleaner, remove more dirt. Super Suds washes clothes color bright, too. And you need no bleach. Buy a box at your dealer's tomorrow and carry home a whole truckload of hard-working, wonder-washing suds in one hand, in just one box of the new extra sudsy 1948 Super Suds.
Super suds, extra suds for whiter duds.
The Judy Canova Show is written by Fred Fox and Henry Hooper with John Ward and is produced and directed by Joe Rhines. This is Howard Petrie asking you to use Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair and the new 1948 Super Suds with extra suds for extra whiteness. Now, here's Judy.
Thank you, Howard. And I want to thank you, Eddie Cantor, for dropping in to visit with us tonight.
Judy, it was my pleasure. Will I see you tomorrow in the March of Dimes inaugural parade?
You bet you will, Eddie. I wouldn't miss that parade for anything. All those beautiful floats and those great big giant balloons. It'll be wonderful.
Just as wonderful, Judy, as the great work that you've been doing to combat infantile paralysis.
Oh, well, I've only been trying to do my part, Eddie.
You're doing great work, Judy. Make no mistake about it. And because of your untiring efforts and inspiring attitude, I've been asked to tell you that the National Foundation has named you their official March of Dimes girl. Congratulations and good night, Judy.
Folks, this is really an honor I appreciate. You know, infantile paralysis respects no race, color, or creed. It can strike at your child anytime. So please join the good fight against this dreaded disease. Send your dimes and dollars to your local March of Dimes headquarters now. Your contribution may mean the difference between a healthy, happy child or one hopelessly crippled for life. Go to sleep, you little baby. Go to sleep, you little baby. When you wake, your patty, patty cake and rock.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. No other toothpaste cleans teeth better. Colgate cleans teeth thoroughly, safely, reveals natural sparkle and beauty. And scientific tests prove that in 7 out of 10 cases, Colgate Dental Cream instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. See if you don't agree with the millions who have made Colgate America's favorite toothpaste. After you eat and before every date, use Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth.
Eddie Cantor appeared for the courtesy of the brewers of Pabst Bluer Than Beer. Stay tuned to Kay Kaiser with his Comedy of Errors in the College of Musical Knowledge, which follows immediately.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.